The Protect Connect Podcast, UFC 210 After Party Edition. We've been drinking, and you've been warned.
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark night. It's a dark night.
What is up, you savages? This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast After Party Edition, as you've heard, as we've been drinking, as I'm your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for FlowCombat.com, and I am joined tonight with, yes, that's right, the usual suspect, one of my partners in arms as far as watching fights goes, Brian Schoonhofer at BR14.
What's up?
Well, it's nothing much, man. This has been a good night. Well, it's been a crazy night. Let's be honest. It's been a weird and crazy night, right?
Weird vibes.
Okay, cool. Maybe good is a little bit of default. I like being positive, but I also like being real. So yeah, let's call it for what it was. It was a weird night.
Strange.
Was a strange night, but we're going to break it down from bottom to top as we do here. And under the influence of alcohol, I just finished a nice big swell Maui IPA. You had one of those earlier, my friend. What did you think?
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby?
It's good.
It's good. I like it. It's, being Hawaiian aside, it was actually recommended as far as, you know, a good IPA. And you know me, I'm an unabashed IPA fan. But now I've switched over, and yes, I'm back to, if you heard the top five bad tattoos segment, we were drinking Hell or High Watermelon Wheat Beer, and I am back on the watermelon grind, my friend. You've had that one too.
It's good stuff.
You liked it?
Yeah, it's a little sweet. I don't really care for that light of beer, but yeah, it's good.
Me too, yeah. Like, you rarely see
one
me drinking...
One and done, and I'm enjoying it.
Well, you rarely see me drinking a wheat beer, right?
Yeah, true.
Like, hardly ever. That's one I was drinking, and it's because it's very drinkable. Anyways, not to jump into the beer reviews, although some of you do appreciate that, we're going to talk fights. We're going to talk about them from bottom to top. I know, we really want to get to the co and main event, so let's get this kickstarted so we can eventually work there, because again, we're working from bottom to top here. Now,
we
jump into the prelims, you saw most of the prelims, Brian, but you were at work,
so... Yeah, the first and last one.
Okay,
yeah.
First and last one, okay. Well, let me set up the first one, and we'll work our way to the last one. So we're going to jump over here. And that first one was Janelle Laza from the Philippines versus Russia's Magomed Bibilatov. And I had Bibilatov on this. He was like, he ended up opening as like a four, like three and a half to 4-1 favorite, which is huge for a UFC debutant, which tells you he's very, people are very high on this guy. I saw him before, against Darren Freelo, WSOF, but he's kind of fought all over the world. And although he's a Russian guy, you can wrestle, and he's aggressive, durable, and technical, and all those great things. Where I kind of relate to this guy is his first martial art, he was taught by his uncle from a childhood. His uncle is still in his corner to this day, and that was Kenpo Karate.
Yeah,
so this guy's like
cool.
A national level competitor black belt. And you know me, as somebody who's trained with high level black belts and competed on national level and traveled
time.
Around the world with Kenpo Karate, that's my shit.
Definitely.
And there's an admitted bias there. But that aside, I actually said the kicks might get him in trouble because Laos is like an amazing boxer. Like, forget the Manny Pacquiao comparisons because they're a different style and also a different stance.
Oh, he's the guy that was compared to Manny Pacquiao.
Maybe he is, but he is Filipino and his primary strength is boxing. But he's got Muay Thai and a Wushu Sanda background, which, like, Wushu Sanda, like Kung Lee and all those guys, it's like competitive Kung Fu and sport Kung Fu, which I talked about in the Breakdown podcast. But those guys are really good at, like, catching kicks and countering, whether they're catching them and striking or catching them and taking down. So, you know, that could have been a problem. That said, Bibilatov took him a first round and arguably an illegal blow or two because they're actually, that was one of the more major notes of this fight. Taking nothing away from Bibilatov, he was favored to win, but he did, do two low blows. They look accidental, you know, off of like inside leg kicks, typical culprits. But the second one was bad enough where the referee took a point. Me or nobody else on Twitter, I saw really had a problem with it. So it wasn't that big of a deal. He still took the decision handily. Showed us a lot of stuff
Okay.
Showed us, you know, not that flyweights, you know, have trouble going three rounds, but yes, he showed us he can go three rounds. He can be disciplined. He gets stronger as the fight goes on. So I look forward to seeing more. Unfortunately, it seems like that line's going to be way too inflated to play the guy going forward. So I'm just going to be enjoying him as a martial artist. But he helped my parlays tonight because we did. We'll get to it at the end with the official count, but we did well at Mixed Martial Analyst / Dan Tomlin over here.
Heyo.
You played conservative, so you're a good boy this time,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, I played good boy this week.
No problem. You can't lose
fresh,
what you don't
fresh
bet.
Fresh out of vacation. Got to be a good boy.
Take note from Brian here, ladies and gentlemen. Can't lose what you can't bet. All right, so we'll jump to the next fight. You saw this one, Caitlin Chookagian versus Irene Aldana?
Yeah, those kicks.
Those kicks indeed. And if, you know, there definitely seems like a ceiling. There definitely seems like a definite physical prototype of female that is going to give Chookagian problems. But I can see where the comparisons to Frankie Edgar within her camp could come to with the way she mixes everything up and she continues
around
to develop,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. She's looking better, yeah.
And I thought Aldana was going to be favored in this fight, and it's weird because Aldana, in case people don't know, she was favored a lot in Invicta where she was just, you know, putting on fight after fight that was super impressive. So her line got kind of inflated from there. But I did think it was a tight fight, and I wouldn't have blinked twice if she was favored here, but she wasn't opened as the favorite. Which I know attracted some action. I felt the safe play when I said my breakdown was the over. So we'll get to it. But within the first four fights of the night, my three key parlay pieces hit. The first one was Bibliotov. I played him straight up because I couldn't tell if he was going to get the division inside the distance. And the next one, with this one, I couldn't tell who was going to win. But I knew both girls were durable.
Definitely.
So I played the over because a lot of times the over
is rangy too.
Yeah, and the over oftentimes is opened at 235 to 275 now. I don't know what this one is opened at, but I believe I played it at 235 to 245, which was crazy because of all those standard women's overs that do normally cash, hence the justification of an opener of a 235 to 275 line. This took a while to get up to even the 235 point. And although we're talking about inches of numbers at that point of favorites, as far as to what they regularly have priced for female overs, this was a bargain. Because even though I agree and I don't hate you, and your record's probably on the positive if you go out and bet like literally every female over,
yeah,
this was a one where I actually was legitimately favoring him, like broad statistics and you know, bullshit aside, you know what I'm saying? Like, really definitely technically looking at this fight. Okay. And it cashed. So, congrats to you if you cashed that. The next fight, though, I completely avoided. Did you see Josh Emmett versus Dez Green?
Definitely.
And, I mean, I thought it was 29. I figured the judges would have a problem with it. So, that's why I wasn't confident. But as far as my scorecard, I was confident in a 29-28 Desmond Green. Does that sound accurate? What are you watching?
Agree. Yeah, I agree. It was a close third round, but I gave that third round to Emmett. But I say the first two were definitely for Green.
You know, I can't comment so much on now because now it's coming back foggy, hence probably the beers. But I put this one to avoid because Emmett should have been favored as he was cleaner, but Desmond Green is hard to tell because he only recently started working with Henry Hooft over at Black Stallions, and you saw it because if you look at his previous fights, like in Bellator, like Des Green's been around for a minute, but he was always kind of sloppy in transition when he would hurt guys who kind of get hungry. So from the efficacy of his technique to his tendencies when he would get guys hurt, it's complete opposite from this fight because this fight he was clean, he was patient, he was inefficient, right?
Definitely.
Like you could have made arguments that like I think he's winning. Like I thought he was winning every round, but I thought he wasn't being efficient enough.
Yeah.
To where I thought I can't remember the round off the top of my head, so forgive me. But that's why, hence the 29-28, why I thought Josh Emmett took one of those rounds. Maybe I was with you on the third. Maybe it was the second from
just,
what my memory
it
thought.
It wasn't that Emmett was winning, but he did more, I feel like.
He did those typical things that judges usually award, and even though the rules have changed, and even though we're in a crazy place like New York,
yeah,
I can't blame you there, Brian, as I think we all are kind of still going off that typical judges mentality from 2008 to 2015 of forward pressure, right? Regardless if it's effective.
True.
I mean, how many
especially
in New York State, and then even just traditionally, how many decisions have we seen Diego Sanchez win off ineffective pressure, right?
I'll never forget that Ross Pearson one.
Exactly. Nothing to bank off in the first place, especially now, but that doesn't mean it still doesn't exist as far as judges, because these could very well be the judges that have been judging MMA all along, right?
Yeah. True.
You know, so it's still shaky ground. So the next one, this was great. I love hitting those key pieces early, man. You almost can run into dangerous territory because you have so many, not only, you know, for lack of a better word, noobs, but you get those noob, oh God, it sounds so ignorant. debutantes. You, there's debutante fighters like even on main cards, so it's hard to even, you know, stereotype negatively toward the undercard. But with those debutante fighters, it gets a little nervous. But if you have your key plays, you know, hence key parlay pieces, guys you attach your dogs to, the core of your parlays, no matter what they may be or their variations, that's what I mean by key parlay pieces. And nothing, and I know you're a man, you've done your share of parlays, Brian, over the years. Because you've been betting for a couple of years now, even though you're more on the conservative side, and I don't blame you. But you know what I mean by key pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And Gregor Gillespie was one of mine. And I'm a guy, as a guy who waves the flag for awkward grapplers, like Chris Holbrook's my dude. I pick Holbrook against Northcutt, even though that fight got pulled apart and Barbarina took it, which I picked Barbarina. And I don't think I picked Holbrook against Matthews, but he was the biggest underdog on that card. And I told everybody, like, he's super live in this spot. I may have actually still ended up picking Matthews, but I do remember, and I will stand by that, you know, I told people to beware of Holbrook. What did you see in this fight? Pretty clear, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just...
Was that the first time Holbrook had been finished?
Yes, but I'm glad you note that, because he's been rocked and dropped before, and that's been kind of the knock on him, not just his grappling style, which I would defend his grappling style, but the one thing I couldn't defend, Brian, is when people would criticize his shin, because against Ramzy Nijem in a fight that he arguably lost, I thought he lost. Mm-hmm. I think we watched that one together, and I was talking about, oh, man, that was one of my underdogs, and I'm glad it cashed, but I don't think he won.
Yeah,
true. But he was rocked in that fight, I believe. Before. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's not every fight because they're not all available, but this is about the second or third time I've run Chris Holbrook through the comb, so I've watched even his regional fights a couple times, there's fights there he's been rocked too, so I don't blame people for saying like he had a questionable chin, but that was one of the criticisms people said, and I think they got validated, right? I mean, he got iced pretty fast.
Man, poor guy. It was pretty rough too, yeah.
It was, dude. I mean,
what a clean combo, though.
It was, and that was one of the things why I wasn't quite as high on Gregor Gillespie. One, people see the wrestling credentials and assume he's a national NCAA champion, like, you know, Brock Lesnar. That's very few of those guys, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's really big. I don't know if he was... Actually, I might be getting that wrong, but essentially the only person he lost to was, I believe, Jordan Burroughs. Hmm. Anyways, he's a really talented wrestler. And but the thing was, when I went and watched Gregor's wrestling footage, it's not the same as the MMA footage. I mean, obviously it's a different sport. It's different setup. It's different spaces. But, like, I like to compare it to, like... you know, wrestling is so much beyond, like, a reactive double leg shot, right? As far as offense, and especially defense, because guys have gotten so much better at defending your basic shots.
Oh, yeah.
So when I point to good wrestling, I often use terms like lever awareness and grip awareness. And that sounds like fancy window dressing, but there's actually meaning to that. And without going into a super long grappling tangent, I usually point to Daniel Cormier, which we'll get to later, versus Dan Henderson. Right, where a grip and lever awareness, lever, you know, means arms and legs. You use them to pose, you use them for leverage. So if you understand the leverage and mechanics and the basic physics of what an arm can do from what position and what a leg can do from what position, what basic balance points are from certain positions, this is what I mean from lever and limb awareness and leverage. And when you're a really good wrestler, like Khabib or Cormier, that's the mastery you're kind of seeing, because they're essentially seeing guys, like, they'll take, not only will they take them down, you'll see these guys almost get to their feet, and what do? They pick them off and they fall on their face and look like a dummy,
so
right?
True, yeah.
And that's lever awareness, and Gregor had that, but he was kind of muscling a lot of his takedowns in MMA, and he didn't show the striking well. I have confidence that his takedown is going to come together, because 9 out of 10 wrestlers, whether the regardless of their ceiling in MMA, their takedown games, you can make the argument, increase over time, right?
Oh, definitely. Into especially MMA. If they are able to incorporate it with their striking.
Yeah, but that's the question. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's the striking, right?
Yeah,
and then,
definitely.
And granted, I am the most contrarian dude who's like, calm down, everybody, calm down. This knockout doesn't say everything, but it does say a lot.
Definitely, 100%.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, like people said, I guess he has a glass chin, but... I mean, that was pretty vicious.
And regardless, it's going to help Gregor's confidence. Hopefully, it doesn't help it in the wrong, where we see him kind of fall in love as it's striking. I want to see him...
Johnny Hendricks eat too many cheeseburgers.
Exactly. But regardless, I hope you play Gregor this time, because I think his line's going to be inflated as fuck. And if anybody knows the inflation of wrestler lines or playing against it, it's me and Brian, because it's one of our favorite lines to play against.
True.
But Gregor definitely is going to deserve said inflation. So we'll go to the next one. I don't know if you saw this one, Brian, but this was my first underdog pick of the night. I ended up 3-1 to this point, you know, officially picking Emmett, even though that was a fight to avoid. My first dog pick, and I actually felt good about this one, was Pat Cummins.
Yeah, I missed the first round.
Oh, the first round. I'll set up the first round real quick, and I'll let you pick up from the second.
Good, yeah.
The first round had me scared, because, again, I was like, you know, I agree with his chin. Oh, yeah. But Pat Cummins took a year off. Not only did he take a year off, he changed camp, which can be, you know, an intangible for the negative, but he changed camp with Neil Melanson, which I know, bias Dan, you're one of Neil's guys, but the proof is in the pudding when you look at wrestlers from, you know, he didn't show it tonight so much with Rumble Johnson, but Michael Chandler and Kamaru Usman, etc., who we'll talk about Usman as well later, who did great. But wrestlers do really well with Neil's style because Neil's a catch wrestling guy. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of faith that Cummins was going to get this illusion of striking out of his head because he's been stopped by strikes in, what, three out of his last four bad? Yeah, so I don't blame you for, like, not backing Cummins here, by the way, but again, the year off, and he's with, like, the best stylistic and striker to enforce a wrestler who's grappler strong, who we saw take apart guys like Antonio Carlos Jr., who's a world champion and grappler, who we saw a flying triangle Gary Tonin, who's, like, the hot shit right now, no-gi, right? Yeah. And, like, not even MMA. So, yeah, Pat Cummins is a legit grappler. It's just getting in that mindset. I knew Neil was going to be the guy to get him in that mindset. But that regardless, that mindset was troubled, Brian, because the first round he was stunned / dropped twice. It was one of those really quick drops that he recovered. So you're kind of curious to what the stats credited, but essentially it was he was dropped twice. Wow. And it was bad, and he ends up getting the takedown toward the end of the round, and he gets the takedown toward the end of the round, which is impressive. Okay. But even then, I still think I tweeted, like, it seems like it's only a matter of time. Now, you saw the second round.
Yeah, started from like 4 minutes in. Just pretty much manhandled him on the ground for the most part.
Yeah,
Blaschewicz was he was trying off his back. He was attempting with a triangle and an armbar, I believe, in the second round.
Yeah, Brian's good with the in-fight reads. Like, put it this way, Brian. Like, toward the end of the first round and being in the second, you would have been like, if we were watching it together, like the main card, which we'll get to, you'd have been like, he's gas. Blaschewicz is gas. Because that's how I kind of felt. Yeah. And it was kind of cool. Like, even at that point, I knew it was kind of, I probably didn't tweet that because I think, you know, I knew it was like early instinct at that point. But I was like, yeah, dude, this guy, I'm pretty sure this dude's gas right now. And, you know, the pressure just started, the persistency and all that paid off. And I think, you know, we saw the last of that fight, you know.
Yeah, he's a grinder, man. He's always been that way.
He needed a win, man. It's tough.
He needed to stop standing and banging.
It's tough with these. I was talking about this in the Breakdown podcast, but it's tough with these guys because they're athletic outliers. They're Olympic or Olympic training partners like Pat Cummins, but at the same time, they're older guys who got an MMA leg. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they can't find fights because they're so damn good, but they're not experienced. So what happens is you have to take fights against DC on short notice on that freak occasion happening just to get into the UFC. And then your fast track with straight killers since.
You got
yeah, and then your fast track with like straight killers since, win or lose, which you did both win and lose. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it's a really weird sample size where you don't want to condemn the guy, but you also kind of – I understand why people would bet against him here. Because, again, it's just so troublesome. You're like, how does someone recover from that, you know? Because he's clearly super talented, but he's also, like, having to be fast-tracked way harder just because he was a guy who was, like, taking it to Verdun and, like, top heavyweights and light heavyweights and broken people in the practice rooms, you know? And we know practice room is much different. Most of my miles have been spent in the practice room. That's why I have so little competitions. I mean, it's a different thing. The fight game is completely different than the practice room, and unfortunately, matchmakers and organizations don't have that understanding or sympathy.
Well, the pressure, Jesus.
All right, well, then move to the next fight. This fight was like, people didn't believe me. This was my most expected fight of the night, like my most anticipated fight of the night.
Lord.
Shane Burgos versus Charles Rosa. I love both these dudes. I love Rosa, especially because he's a karate guy again, but I picked against him here because essentially I felt that Burgos was a stylistic antithesis. It looked like, to me, I'll let you touch here in a second, but it looked like to me, I was eating during this fight, so half my attention was on food, and food got
still
delivered at this point.
75% of your attention.
Brian has seen me. I'm a fucking efficient machine. Just eating two machine. Hands. Two hands. There's no wasted motion. But it was sushi and beer, too, so it was good. But Rosa and Burgos, and it looked like he was essentially picking them out. Rosa's picking them out from the outside with kicks, which was his best bet. But my thing was Rosa's defense and Burgos' ability to capitalize on those exchanges with that left hook. And tell me what you think, and leading to the ending and what you thought of the ending.
Yeah, Rosa, he had a slow start, I felt like. He was trying to find his timing with the kicks, and then once he found that, I felt like he was controlling the fight. I feel like Burgos was just trying to land those big shots. I mean, I guess what he was like 7-0 with 7 KOs, right, or something? No, he's 8-0.
I don't know the record of my hand, but yeah, he's undefeated. Like, yes, sir.
So, I feel like he was just looking for that the whole fight. He got it, but I felt like the big problem was his defense, Rose's defense, in my opinion. I feel like he was able to get tagged way too often. and it was okay at first, but then he just ate those combos, and that was just about it for him.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I'm not disagreeing with the stoppage. I said in my tweet, I said I don't know how to feel about the stoppage, but what I did say, I think the first drop like made him cross-eyed for sure. Oh. And I think the first time he got dropped looked way worse. The problem was the second time he dropped, got dropped, not only the second time he got dropped, but the last two times he absorbed strikes, which the first of said spoken time I'm talking about was the second time he got dropped, his eyes immediately fixed on as he back-rolled something normal tactic, a little flamboyant, yes, but normal tactic. His eyes were immediately fixed on his opponent until the second shot landed, and the second shot even, the final shot, his eyes were still fixed on his opponent. He got up for defense. I think Rosa would have survived and probably lost the decision if that fight went on, so I'm glad they stopped it as far as his health, because both guys are entertaining as shit.
Yeah, it was a great
So fight. I want to see them both get nice bookings and make quick turnarounds, and I believe I tweeted fight. That as well. But that's all I meant, essentially, and it was a weird stoppage. I don't disagree with it, but I do stand by that it was a weird stoppage for that
same reason.
Well,
it's hard in those situations, because it did look like he was falling. He could have just tried to be regaining his balance, but at the same time, his hands weren't high.
Mm.
He ate two in a row, and that last one he was falling backwards. Yes, his eyes may have fixated, but after he started to fall.
Absolutely.
So I think the stoppage was good, maybe a little early, but that's a hard decision for those refs.
I believe it was early, but I don't believe it was bad, if that makes sense, right?
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I think that's the middle ground I think we should all side with, because I think that's the middle ground that I think you could agree with on either side of that. And again, my pick was Burgos here, so I picked the damn guy to win.
Man, that was a,
but,
that was a really mean comment.
But I'm not dismissing anybody's initial objections. I know initial emotions are tough, but there was some ground to that. But again, I'd rather see both these guys healthy and fighting again.
Rosa had a layoff, right, too?
Yeah, and I talked about layoff, so hopefully he takes this in a positive, Brian, and like, hey, we know you're tough, we know you're good, that's fine. But you can't keep getting in these tough fights like you did with Dennis Seaver and Yair Rodriguez. And now it costed you a stoppage when you weren't even stopped. But it was because your defense was so damn bad that you didn't give the referee any damn choice but to stop it, right?
Totally.
So hopefully Rosa takes the positive from it and doesn't take it like a chip on his shoulder, which is hard because chip on shoulders is what fuels fighters to fight in the first damn place. So I wouldn't hate him for fueling it, but I'm just saying I hope he fuels it in a positive. You know what I'm saying? And comes back strong because both guys have a lot to offer. Next fight, this one was like, I was going to put this on my parlay piece. I was confident, but it felt like Strickland was live in this piece, but I was wrong. It was Kamaru Usman for Sean Strickland. You watch this? God, what do you think? Give your thoughts first.
So this guy, it's funny, this guy I worked with was like,
okay,
why is Strickland such a huge underdog against this guy? And I was like, I forgot the matchup, and I was like, who's he fighting? He said, I don't know, some guy starts with a U. I was like, oh, Usman, it's over. It's like, you have to see this guy, but he's a beast. So once the fight started happening, I texted him. I said, man, now you know why Strickland was such an underdog. Dude, those were 3 10-8 rounds, if you ask me. I mean, I'm not a judge, but if we're going off the new judging system and there are 10-8 rounds, that's about as clean as it gets as far as decision goes.
I'm with you on that because I think my initial feeling was too strong 10-8s. Maybe I wasn't watching one of the rounds close enough. But when you think about it in this aspect alone, not just are the judges encouraged to give more liberal 10-8s, but go ahead and think about a spot where Strickland had Usman in trouble. Wait a minute. Go think about a spot that Strickland was taking it to Usman. Okay, maybe not
any
taking
offense.
It to him. Yeah, go think about a spot where Strickland, let's just narrow it down even broader for the guy.
Dude, how many strikes
I can't think
did
of shit.
Yeah, how many strikes did he throw?
Maybe. I can't think of shit for
under
him.
Under 10?
Yeah. I can't think of shit that went well for him.
His corner was like, throw elbows. He was like, yeah.
And people were like, oh, he was close to two arm bars, but I saw some people think it was close. First of all, if you know Usman's grappling credentials and his athleticism alone, both those things cancel out those armbar attempts.
So strong.
Secondly, forget any previous information to Usman. If you know grappling, I feel like I wouldn't be alone in my opinion, because my opinion was that those armbars weren't close. He knew they were coming and he had the proper defense.
Definitely. He didn't look like he was in danger.
So I didn't. I think you gotta understand, it's not that Rogan and Cruz aren't better than me, because they completely are. But you have to understand, these commentators are live. They're in the moment. They're human. They're not beyond mistakes, but more importantly, depending on the position where the action's going, a lot of times they're using either the screen and or in person, both of which can be detrimental depending on the angle, because we've both been to MMA fights for over a decade now, yeah. Live, right? And you know that there's certain parts, depending on where you're sitting, where you have a really good view, but that good view, especially on the ground, changes in an instant to where the camera becomes the better view, or vice versa.
So true.
So when these commentators, when I notice when they're locked on, oftentimes they're kind of locking on, they're committing to one view or the other, especially per exchange. I feel that's a kind of a safe cutoff average. And so I feel that, in other words, I'm just saying we should cut them some slack even if we don't agree with what they're seeing, because a lot of times if you go back and you play super analysis and look where their eyes are looking to, you know, changing through the camera views on Fight Pass, you can see that they're actually fixated on a certain view, allowing them a certain vantage point. So it shouldn't condemn them completely. We've all been there, right? Totally. I fucking make how many wrong fucking calls and typos and tweets a fucking card, and these
especially
guys do it all
the
time.
Heat of the moment, they're live. Yeah. The energy there might be crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think these were close. It was a great, great victory from Usman. Then it's gonna be interesting to see how they match him up going forward.
Good lord, they gotta give him someone good after that.
Okay, before we take our break, we're gonna close off here with the last fight of FS1 prelims. Now, this is one you didn't see, right?
I missed it. Yeah, I didn't see anything.
Okay, this was one of the biggest favorites on the card, I believe, under Bibliotov, but you know, up there, Mons Jury was around a -420. Excuse me, favorite. And Mike Della Torre, underdog. I believe he opened at -2, 2.5 to 1, or +2, 2.5 to 1 underdog. But I had a respect for Della Torre. I picked him against Godofredo Pepe. Didn't work out because, you know, Della Torre is just damn hittable. So I figured Miles Drew was going to find a finish here. Just the price was way too high for a guy who hasn't won in 2 years, haven't fought in over a year or so. And yeah, because he hadn't fought in like December 2015, where he got submitted by Charles Oliveira, and then before that was April 2015, where he got ass kicked by Donald Cerrone.
He got spanked.
So it was kind of hard in 2017 to see how he was going to bounce back, you know, if it was a soul stealer, those two losses or not, you know?
True.
So I stayed the fuck away from this fight, but Jury took his back and choked him out in the first round. So
that Jury Jitsu's coming strong.
Yeah, he had a really awkward post-fight interview. I'm and sure. I can't even remember what it says, but it was a night of post-fight, awkward post-fight interviews. So that doesn't surprise you, does it, Brian?
Not at all.
Well, we're gonna, on the note of post-fight interviews, we're going to have a post-fight beer refill as we take a break right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast and come back with main card recap for UFC 210.
Cucarachas enojadas.
And we're back right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast for the UFC 210 After Party Edition. As me at the MMA Analyst recap the action with at BR14N, that's right, my friend Brian Schoonover. We're on the main card, but Brian, before we get to the main card, we're not just naming this as an after party edition to be cute. We're not just saying we're gonna refill our drinks for a segue. We're actually sadly degenerates and we like to drink. So on that note, my friend.
Cheers.
Cheers.
You convinced me to try this Hiller High Watermelon again.
And I feel weird saying any kind of fruit flavor with a beer as Brian takes a sip here for the audience, because I'm not a fruity beer lover at all. But a lot of beer and craft beer places are integrating fruits into them, and I like it when they do it smoothly, when they have a good hops and body to go with it. And this is a good light beer to me. I don't blame Brian if he doesn't like it, though. What do you think?
It's a good river beer.
It's a good river beer. It's a good, I like it. I like it as a good barbecue beer, because one of my favorite barbecue joints in Brooklyn would have this beer on tap, and they were specialized in barbecue and chicken and waffles. And this is kind of like that beer.
Watermelon and chicken waffles, that sounds like heaven.
Exactly. Watermelon, chicken and waffles, a light beer that'll go down with a really heavy food, but it will also fuel your alcohol enjoyment of said food. So yeah, it's a perfect barbecue beer in that sense. And I'm not a fan of the wheat beers. Brian will tell you, I'm like an IPA or die like dude.
Well, light beers, I just drink them too fast. That's my problem.
Nah, that's your reason. But you also, you drink light beers too fast, but you also, like me, have an appreciation of the IPAs, too. So I know.
True. Oh, yeah.
I've won him over to the dark side. Hopefully, listen to the Protect Nick podcast, will win you over as we break down high-level beer and MMA, apparently. But let's jump to the main card, my man. I believe was it started by the Brooks fight? Was that it? Oh, God, I'm so terrible right now.
Yes,
it was. Will Brooks versus Charles Oliveira. Now, I'll let you comment on this fight here first, but I will just set it up by saying the pick was Brooks. I didn't have him as a parlay piece. I saw people with Brooks as the parlay piece feeling good. I felt he should win the fight, and I did put out there that I did play the prop inside the distance, even with a front flyer for the third round, because if Charles Oliveira makes it to the third round, he usually quits in that round, if not the second.
Yeah.
Pardon me here, the beer burps are catching up, but yeah, so I did play Brooks a little heavy in the prop department, but I left him, thankfully, I left him out of my parlays because even if I go with a guy in the prop department, that doesn't mean I go with the parlay department because a spoiler is a spoiler, my friend. And Charles Oliveira, even though he's an underdog most of the time, he always has that trap-filled fight. What did you think about this fight before I jump into my take on it?
Talking to a friend, and again, he was like, so what about Charles Oliveira?
Okay.
He was like, this guy can submit anybody.
Right.
He really can. I mean, think about the submissions he's pulled off. I mean, they're incredible. He's so impressive when it comes to that. His strength and... It was crazy to see. I thought Will Brooks was going to get a little bit more fight, but that was pretty intense. It's a typical Charles Oliveira being the hammer kind of situation.
And it was weird. Like, I'm going to have to watch it again to give a better kind of recap how the takedown happened. Because I'll be honest, I maybe looked down, maybe opened, you know, you heard the Frosty Beverage soundtrack sound. It wasn't a soundtrack sound, it was a real sound. And I might have done one of those. And I whatever it was, I missed the actual exchange where he took him down. Did you see that exchange?
Where Brooks got taken down? I believe it was a trip. I think it was a trip with his left leg.
And again, that was the problem. Like, I could see the play on DuBronx here because essentially Brooks was going to play within DuBronx's strength, which is the clinch, and that's both with striking, as DuBronx has good Muay Thai knees. That, with his left hook, is probably DuBronx's
and
best strike.
Great.
And then his clinch and grappling. Exactly, you're right, Brian. And it opens up that. But with watching how Brooks made his decisions, his fight-to-fight improvements, facing a more diverse threat, in my opinion, in Marcin Hill. Maybe not a better submission threat. We're splitting hairs at that point. We're comparing Marcin Hill versus Charles Oliveira.
Yeah.
But I felt Marcin Hill was a more diverse threat. And I liked what I saw from Brooks. And even in subsequent fights, you know, his shoulder pressure, his top pressure. He does a lot that people don't give him credit for. So, regardless of who you like or who you root for here, that's why my pick essentially was Brooks.
Yeah, makes sense. Smart. But 18-2.
I wasn't surprised with the upset, but I think... I can't remember the exact few, but Patrick Weidman, shout out to Patrick Weidman, amazing analyst who I have a ton of respect for over there at Bleacher Report. Does a great job, written long form, and his podcast over with Connor Rebush is another amazing analyst over there, the Heavy Hands podcast. But I forget the exact words of his, but he kind of encapsulated it great, and I replied to it saying, just, yeah, like, you're right, man. Like, it felt like all the eyes watching that fight, it was like, as cliche as it sounds, it was like quicksand, right? Because it was like a slow thing where you're like, where's Brooks' head at? Like, he knows when you're dry and in the grappling department in the first round. Like, this is the worst place to be the grappler.
Saw him grab him, it's over.
And yeah, and it was just, he was getting way too...
Almost Damian Maya like.
And as a guy, defensively, who that's my biggest culprit, is getting too comfortable in bad spots and putting myself exposed to those said bad spots in the first place. Like, I understand that a lot. And even though I've paid for it more often than not, I understand that even if I wasn't, you know, shitty Dan Tom skills, I was more athletic Will Brooks skills, that's still a bad proposition no matter how you cut it. Putting yourself in a bad situation is bad no matter who you are, folks.
Yeah.
And this was a good fight to remind of it.
Agreed.
All right. Well, I'm glad it didn't cost me too much, and it certainly didn't cost you, Brian, as Brian was smarter than me and all of us probably listening, as he stayed away from playing this crazy game called MMA. Although, when we'll get him back. We'll get him back.
Don't you worry.
We'll get him back. We'll get his results, good or bad. But no, props to Brian, but for being smart on this.
I need to see those lines, and we'll see.
All right, well, next fight. This was good, because I said I hit my three key parlay pieces in the first four fights with Gillespie, the over on the female fight, and Bibi Ladov. Well, my key underdog picks were Patrick Cummins, which went over, and the other one was Thiago Alves. Now, granted, I did bad in the prop department again, because again, this was another prop I went heavy on, even though it was one prop. It was Thiago Alves, but regardless, that prop was still you know, was still justified. I mean, I was calling for knees the whole time. We saw him stun Cote with the knee early. Oh, yeah. I don't know if we got him with any more, but he took control of the fight from there on out. That was that knee, at Cote's the very least, was a clear turning point.
Hell, man. Oh, my God.
And it's funny. Someone tweeted me, like, why would the knees be a problem? I'm like, because I said, you know, because I guess, you know, Alves getting 5 KOs by way of knees officially wasn't enough, and Cote being dropped or stunned in 5 of his last 6 fights was enough just to bet against the guy. And
still
I like Cote.
Has a great chin, obviously. Yeah, still has a great chin. He survived, but good lord.
And I still love Cote, again, but this was a... Excuse me, this was a fight that was like a classic. I tweeted this... Excuse me. Brian, I tweeted this earlier where I was like, this is a classic fight that was a reminder of... Not only MMA math doesn't work, but MMA short memory will work against you because we all have short memory. I'm guilty of it too. I'm not saying I'm not, but my pick was Alves, and that was because I knew we all have a short memory, where even me, okay? Listen to this. I picked Jim Miller over Thiago Alves' his last fight. I picked Patrick Cote over Donald Cerrone. If you do the MMA math on just that, forget the MMA math on this matchup on paper, you would come up with what the odds makers did, right? Patrick Cote should win this fight. But that's the problem. That doesn't mean shit.
It doesn't.
Jim Miller is a criminally underrated underdog. And Patrick Cote, I still, even though I picked against him here, I still stand by my pick against him against Cerrone, even though he lost. Because, like you said, Brian, he still showed that dogged fighter and that durable chin. But the problem was Cote's goddamn competitive streak. He's willing to try to submit a guy like Ben Saunders from guard to prove a point because Ben Saunders was a good fighter on the ground. He eventually finished Ben Saunders from the clinch, where Ben Saunders makes his money with his knees.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So that only proves, shows, and entices Patrick Cote's renowned competitive streak even further. Mm-hmm. And I felt that competitive streak was going to cost him here, which was...
He tried to go down his shield if you watch the end of the third round.
If you watch it, yeah. He tried. He was so emotional, and that's the problem. And he tried to say in some fights, Brian, leading up to this, that he was going to lean on fight IQ. But in other interviews, he even admitted, which is what my initial thought, why I picked against him, Cote even admitted... You can't go against old tricks as an old dog, essentially, is what he was saying in translation from French. And I agree with that. I agree with that for Cote, and I agree with that as a broad statement when we're playing the averages and we're stereotyping fighters. It's terrible to do, but we have to do it to a certain extent, and if we were to do that, I think everybody agrees with me. You're going to bet on a fighter to not adapt his game late into his career toward the end, right? Yeah. I mean, how many times have we seen that?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who you like. That's an undeniable fact.
Yeah.
So I bet against that, and I bet with, I should say, that undeniable fact, because essentially Thiago Alves, even though he looked bad, which I, you know, though it was his responsibility completely, I believe his bad performance was due to a bad weight cut.
Totally.
And essentially, yeah. And essentially, Brian, in my breakdown, I said that the way the puzzle pieces line up, that Thiago Alves is a stylistic antithesis on the feet to Patrick Cote, because Patrick Cote loads heavy on his front foot, which he tried to adjust, as the commentators pointed out, but he loads heavy on his front foot for leg kicks, and more importantly, he loads heavy for his feints. He takes downs, he feints takedowns, and he loads heavy to load his right hand, and all those loads that I keep... that sounds terrible. No, the reason why I keep repeating the word loads is because he dips forward in said loads.
Sure, that's
and
right.
And he's hit... and by dipping his head, you know, forward, he's opened himself to knees in his last handful of fights, hence being dropped 5 out of last 6 in his fight. So,
oh, yeah.
So that is why I picked Thiago Alves. The finish didn't come to fruition, but the pick was justified.
Close twice.
Close, but the pick was justified because
absolutely.
The puzzle pieces were there. It didn't come to fruition, like I said, but the winner, nonetheless, was the same.
Truth.
But you didn't disagree with that decision, right? Pretty clear, right?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty clear?
Clear as day.
All right. Yeah. Cool. We'll go to the next.
Sucks to see Cote retire, too, on that note.
It does. I'm glad they gave him his space, though, and his respect.
That was cool.
And playing it on the fly. Like
Two people. Well, spoiler. Anyways.
Announcers are getting better at that. I mean, I don't think Josh Berkman officially retired, but I remember Brian Stann doing some last-minute improv in similar spirit in Josh Berkman's last fight.
Oh, yeah.
If cool. You remember. And so I'm glad because Cote deserves it, man. He's fought in 3 divisions. He's fought for over a decade under the Zuffa banner alone.
Yeah.
So much respect to him. We're going to jump to the next fight, though, which is a female fight. It's not pulling up on our screen right now, but it's Cynthia Calvillo versus Pearl Gonzalez.
Which was a great fight, I thought. I mean,
it was a good fight.
I thought it was
fun.
One-sided. I thought it was pretty well-rounded at parts.
I got to watch it again.
I was a little wishy-washy.
I thought the winner was clear, but the thing was,
Well, yes.
Here's the reason why I thought it was Closer. Because in doing fight footage on Pro Gonzalez, she actually loses a lot of her rounds in her fights and has that dogged nature where she comes back, right? Mm. The problem was that she was known as a jiu-jitsu specialist. And even though she was known as a jiu-jitsu specialist, had a winning record. And people thought she was a fill-in, by the way. Like, she was actually, like, the UFC had her eyes on her for a minute.
Oh, yeah?
But there was matchup problems and injury problems. I don't think she fought for Invicta, actually, but maybe she did. But there was essentially matchup issues of girls pulling out and organization issues. And then she had, like, a long-string injury that kept out, like, the last half of, over half a year, 2016. And she had, like, interviews, like, speaking about the injuries.
Oh, bummer.
So, like, she was definitely on the UFC radar. She's going to end up in the UFC. She's a good fighter. The problem was, the reason why I bet against her is, even though I felt other people were underestimating her, she was out for a minute, right? I think she had one fight in 23 months or something, which is troubling.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know that statistic very well, my friend.
Definitely.
And
besides Dominic Cruz, I guess. But.
Absolutely, absolutely. She's trouble making the weight, even though she's been on point for a minute. Looks great in all her preparation. And it's funny because she admittedly, like, takes a while to make the weight. She fought at 135 to 125, and then she weighed her way to 115. And if you look at her Instagram, like, there's legit, like, I put a lot of weight in people posting the nutrition, and she's posting, like, legit foods, like asparagus, greens, healthy meats, low carbs. And she's been doing it for at least 6 to 8 weeks out, like she claimed.
Nice.
But it almost, like, the weight cut affected her, because even though I could see why some people, like you were saying, Brian, might have thought it was one-sided, but I'm with you where I thought it was competitive toward the end, because if you look at, again, kind of long-winded here, but when you look at Pearl Gonzalez's past fights, she's won a lot of them coming from behind. Like
Kat Zingano.
Yeah, but the problem was not only do you have a girl with good jiu-jitsu and submission, defense and offense, and Cynthia Calvillo, but Calvillo, in my opinion, had better wrestling and a natural knack for wrestling. Is that was only further proved in this fight, because her wrestling looked even more impressive than previous matches.
Yeah.
And as you know, position wins out of submission more times than not in MMA. So I picked her on those instincts alone, and that's why I might have went with the decision. But I believe I did see my breakdown. Like, there's a possibility for a late finish. It was just a fight that I stayed away from, admittedly, but it looked, you know, Calvillo looked good.
Definitely.
And you're right, Brian, it was closer than I expected when you consider that Gonzalez is a dog till the end. And she waited to the very end to tap, by the way. Like,
she
probably should have tapped earlier. I thought she went out. And a lot of people did, right? I think a bunch of people were watching the fight were yelling, "She went out!" But yeah, all right. That brings us to the co-main event. Controversy City, my friend.
Jesus.
Who did you have before, by the way, before we get in this?
Well, the first round was really close.
Well, before predicting, going in, before the fight
going
started.
I was going with Moose.
Me too, okay.
Not to give, you know, any disrespect to Chris Weidman.
Right.
I'm a Chris Weidman fan. But I just think Musasi's on point right now. He's got the confidence behind him. He's pissed off, which I agree he should be. He's doing really good. So I had him coming in, but I didn't think that Chris Weidman was going to hurt him like he did in the first. I felt Musasi was landing his jabs, getting his timing, and then he got clipped. And you saw his jab was a little bit lazier. He wasn't really under his feet. And then it took the second round. Then he hurt Weidman. Excuse me. His birds are coming in.
No, yeah.
And he hurt him. And yeah, there was controversy with the knees, but we saw, you know, it was legal. And it sucks that it ended that way, but I didn't see that ending well for Chris Weidman either way after that.
Yeah, man, it was tough. I thought, again, I gotta rewatch this. People, this is on both me and Brian's first watch, so please don't condemn us this pick. We're just trying to be as honest as we can off of first watch, which, you know, it's proved with everybody's tweets, no matter who you hold in high regard, emotional first take tweets can be inaccurate. Now you include alcohol and shit. Yeah.
Jeez, and shit.
Jesus Christ, alright. But so please don't condemn us totally for that. But yeah, I agree. I think it was a close competitive first round where I believe I may have leaned toward Musasi, where I believe I saw some people point toward Weidman, and I could have been mad. Again, maybe my memory's pulling tricks on me here. But essentially, regardless of how you scored the first round, I think both me and Brian's take here, safe to say, is that we saw the momentum of the fight pulling toward Musasi's face. Yes.
Well, before the knees.
The first knee changed
the trajectory of a fight regardless. The second knee was iffy in the moment.
Oh, there was jabs and pressure. He even had Musasi even stunned Weidman enough to get a flurry, where it equaled up to Weidman's flurry against Belfort when Belfort was unloading on him. And speaking of Belfort, from Musasi's angle, like Musasi's fight with Belfort, where Musasi was unloading on Belfort against the cage. So Belfort is kind of the middleman for examples there.
Both guys looked good, though, until the second round.
But that was clear.
Until the second round, I think
that was a clear momentum shift. Yes. And we saw Musasi feel that confidence before again in his Belfort fight. And to even though nothing against Weidman, but we saw Weidman falter, you know, temporarily, at least, the pressure like that before in his own fight with Belfort as he did with Musasi. So, yes, you're right, Brian. That shift in sway, if you will, I don't even want to say arguably. I think there's a really good argument, in fact, that, yes, it did happen before any knees happened.
Definitely.
And I thought the knees were legal under the new rules and even under the old rules, being the fact that Musasi was lifting him up. Now, you can argue inches and time lapses from knees to contact, but even under the old rules, put it this way, I'm totally okay with you disagreeing the other way. And again, I still have to watch it again. But even under the old rules, folks, I feel that Musasi's intentions and results from said intentions were so clear, in the 90th percentile clear, that he was lifting Musasi's third point of contact.
Weidman.
Hence his hand, or Weidman's third point of contact. Hence his hands from the ground before Musasi landed those knees.
So under new
rules, I still favor Musasi. What do you think on that? I know we're not experts. This is our first take.
100%.
Okay,
that's accurate.
Old or new rules,
it's
right?
Fight IQ. You could tell he knows what he's doing. He knows that Weidman's trying to play the game. But like I said during it, it's hard even with the new rules. That's still such a wishy washy thing.
It is wishy washy, but I think we can all agree that it's smart in theory, and even if y'all think that it only exists in theory, well, let me say this, there's probably more examples on hand, and granted, one example isn't an end-all be-all, but there is a solid example. In fact, it's a title fight. Go look at Demetrius Johnson versus, I believe it is, maybe both fights, but Ali Bagutinov, and or his fights with John Dodson. Demetrius Johnson lifts his hands up to Nima. Actually, I believe it's the John Dodson fights. I can't remember the first or second one. That's where the confusion is coming in. But it's the same point where John Dodson takes that three-point position because he's a wrestler. He's a smart fighter. He has awareness of someone trying to take his back. So he's comfortable with turtling out to get up. Like I talked to you often on this podcast, okay? Mm-hmm. But we saw Demetrius Johnson do those lift-ups. And the reason why I'm quoting that is because even the commentary quotes it and credits it, and there was no referee intervention for 1 second for those fights.
No way.
Of course, there's no such thing as one example, end-all, be-all, because even the commission has trouble fucking following their own rules.
True, but Mergliotta had a really terrible point of view for that, too.
That's another good point, too. In Mergliotta's defense, even though we'll get to it, I mean, I believe it's, first of all, it's Mergliotta's offense, so people getting mad at either side of the party, I believe it falls in Mergliotta's lap. I'm the first to defend referees. It's a hard job, but Brian, please elaborate on that. That's a good point because, yes, I think he had a bad view.
Definitely. Not only did he have a bad view, but then at the same time he said, it was a legal knee, but you still have 3 minutes and 13 seconds. And if you look back, they called the fight was ended at 3 minutes and 13 seconds. So he asked, how much time did we have? And they told him 3 minutes and 13 seconds. Like, the commission doesn't even know what they're talking about back and forth. So it's frustrating to see. And I understand the confusion because, yes, it is. It's a question of, should replays be allowed in a referee's decision? I think so. Now, if you're going to have such a wishy-washy rule, I think there should be an allotted time for the referee to review the decision. It has to be quick and instant, or maybe there's people to make that decision on the side. Who knows? That's a little outreaching, but...
Well, no, it's not, because I think the strike's on a bigger thing where we all get on commissions and rules, but I think the one thing we can agree is, like, all rule sets can improve and all commissions can improve.
Definitely.
But you hear people waving this flag, so I'm not the first to say it, but goddamn, is this a great example. This is why we need a consistent rule set across all the commissions.
Totally.
The same thing with this whole federal and state law bullshit when it comes to stuff like marijuana or other things. Like, we need something consistent to where people can run fucking business practices without having their dogs and coworkers shot, okay? Like, we need some consistency here. It's not as big of a deal as that issue that I just said in a big scale, granted. But as far as MMA space, it's a huge issue.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it now. And we're seeing some commissions like California being super proactive, trying things that we all want to see for fighter safety, for efficacy, efficiency. And then we're seeing fucking shit shows like the New York Athletic Commission,
who are
fucking trying to stop fights for breast implants,
stupid,
and then backing bad decisions / going against their going against the ref call, like you said, they actually went against Mergliata's call. So we have three different things. We have Mergliata's call, we have the official decision, and what really happened / the public opinion, all of which different opinions, which is the fucking, hence the shit show, right?
Definitely.
So if anything, whether any side you stand, although I don't agree with finger pointing, but whatever side you stand on, I think we can all agree, this is a perfect example on why we need some uniformity amongst our rule set.
It's just, yeah, that was, I mean, it's a hard decision, but there was a couple of factors. Like I said, the point of view is a big thing. The fact that the replay was actually taken into consideration for what I think maybe the first time.
Yes, true. And I agree. I would like to see more replays. Anything that's good, any tools that's going to help the judges, whether it's monitors for the judges or replays for the referees, I'm all for, by the way.
Because let's not kid here. Chris Weidman would have stood right up to his feet if he knew that it was legal blows. He would have been like, oh, no, we're good. I'm fine, man. No big deal. Let's
absolutely. And like you said, it's not that we're accusing, because you even said live, like, you made a point. Like, I'm not accusing Chris Weidman of fucking taking an easy way out or this or that. Like,
no way. He's tough as hell.
Because, again, like, whether it's the new rules or the legal rules, even though I back Musasi on newer legal rules, at the same sense, and I said this live, I can understand why Weidman would legitimately think he was in the right.
Totally.
And I don't blame
him. He was told by the referee. He said it himself. Why would the referee stop the fight?
And if you're getting knees in the head, if you have a choice between eating knees to your head or exercising a rule that even you think is 28% right, much less 50% right, much less 75% right, what fucking choice are you going to pick? You're going to pick, hey, wait a minute, is this legal? Yeah. Just real quick, is this legal? I don't blame him for doing that.
When the ref tells you it's an illegal blow and
that too,
you're given 5 minutes, you're like, fuck, I'm going to chill out.
Exactly,
then.
That too.
So and you can't blame the guy.
But at the same time, you know, the argument the other way can be made because
another thing, stop interviewing concussed fighters.
That too. Ugh. Jesus Christ. Because even though Weidman was concussed and that was a painful post-fight interview, like you said, even though Weidman's no biatch, as soon as he realized where this fight was potentially ending, you saw Weidman contesting for the fight to go on before it officially got called. So in Weidman's defense / kind of supporting this point, again, this makes it even more harder to point in the figures either way, which I suggest you don't. I don't think that's the right thing. I think, but I do think the accountability here is on the commission, not the fighters.
Oh my god, yeah. And Mergliata, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a great ref. Shit happens.
But. Exactly. I'm not trying to condemn Mergliata. He seems like, dude, he seems like one of my favorite refs as far as character. Like,
oh yeah,
he's such a big brooding dude, but you can see his sympathy on calls. Even when he has to call fights against the fighter he likes, he'll do it, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm sorry, man. You know, I couldn't, you know, do that." And,
of course.
I forget what fight it was, but it might have been, what fight was it earlier? It was De La Torre Jury. You didn't see that one, but there was this look where like Del Torre was like, "What the hell?" And it was one of those things where like you could tell. Mergliata, I was like, I'm sorry, man, but you weren't defending yourself. And you can see that in the body language. I completely respect that. I think Dan Mergliata did a damn good job on both sides of the fence before.
Totally.
But yes, the accountability, unfortunately, is in the commission. And even though I don't want them to see pointing fingers, even if Mergliata is probably the one to blame than the fighters for sure, I would like to see some accountability fucking somewhere, though, right?
True.
Like, just someone, like, the commission be like, the commission, like, not only take accountability because they fucking should, but, like, help these referees who are taking the brunt of the baseball bats from the public and being like, hey, listen, he's just doing his job. We're defending his stance. We understand what was going wrong. We want to assist that we are standing by his decision as a referee because he's a good referee, but we see the controversy here as we are going to work forward to correct this in the future. God forbid a fucking commission say that kind of a statement where they make everybody look good.
Well, they hate MMA.
Well, MMA.
It's just cursed in New York.
And they need, like, say what you will about politics and the bullshit of our political state, but political speechwriters are what wins a lot of our politicians' fucking campaigns. And fuck, these commissions could use, like, fucking one fucking political speechwriter to, like, have some self-deprecation and fucking learn how to fucking take in a defeat. You know what I'm saying? Like, because it's kind of bullshit with just all the crazy decisions and all the commissions from Jersey, New York, Nevada, we're seeing, and no accountability. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
Anyways, a rant over. Well, let's jump to the main event, my man. Who did you have on this fight? I don't think I even asked you your pick on this fight either.
So I thought Johnson may have come through. If Cormier was going to stand like he said, but then Johnson decided to grapple and I don't know if he gassed himself out after the first. It's hard to say, but he was breathing heavy after that. And it's like, what are you thinking there, man? You had one chance of beating Daniel Cormier, and it wasn't through wrestling.
Yeah, that was tough, man. Like, I think I tweeted this. I was like, I appreciate someone thinking outside the box. I appreciate tactical surprises, like, more than any other guy, right?
Hey, he got takedowns on him. Good.
But when you look at, like, that's why when I said, like, the dynamic of this match remains the same. I'm not trying to use fancy words here. Like, that game plan worked of wrestling worked against Anthony Johnson's natural physical biological makeup.
Yeah, his endurance.
He's improved. I was one of the few that was saying he's improved his wrestling, like to where I thought he could stifle Cormier and take him down, which he showed he could stifle and take him down. But what I said was the problem was, like, I'm like, y'all pump your brakes. Because even the people, like, that were like, Johnson all day, he's got knockout power. And I'm like, I get it. And I was like, and even though, like, I would have been happy for Johnson to win in the sense that, you know, he's a Neil guy and this and that. And, you know, despite maybe his shaky history with domestic abuse, which is pretty sketchy, you know, as a fighter, it was hard not to respect that for sure. But it was just hard. I was like, man, if Johnson wins, it's going to be like a whole slew of, like, told you you had knockout power, dumbass. Yeah, and you're like, oh, I totally didn't know that. But
believe that this guy knocked him out? I can't believe it.
But he flipped it. But he flipped it. But like you said, Brian, he flipped the script on supporters and non-supporters and people in the middle all alike by wrestling DC, right?
Yeah, so a random note, when he was giving his retirement speech.
Okay.
Did you notice Henry Hooft wasn't around? Do you think Henry Hooft just bailed on him?
Ooh.
Because how many times have you heard him in his corner? He says, don't quit. Don't quit. And he gets super aggressive and angry with his fighter. At least with Anthony Johnson, I've noticed that. And then he was asking, where's Henry? He should be in here. And Neil was in there with him when he gave his retirement speech. But
I didn't see Neil in the corner with him, and Neil can't.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Neil that makes sense. Neil is like, he'll go down with a fucking shit.
There was someone Neil's else. I'm not sure. Oh yeah, definitely.
And Neil's Johnson, but yeah. And
you can't miss Neil. He's the biggest motherfucker.
Boy, that was like the same result, but a tale of two endings, right? Because the first one you have Don't Quit. And then not only does Johnson tap, but in the first fight, what is he saying in his post-fight speech? He says, well, no matter what, never quit. Never give up. And he gives this really, I don't know if people remember, but yeah, he gave a really awkward, and I've watched it like a billion times now because they're doing footage for Anthony Johnson and Cormier. I've had to watch that fight, right? Quit, even and yes, tapped. and that's like the infamous, don't quit, Anthony! Don't quit! Don't quit! And by the way, top five coaches and corners, like, it's like, if you had to have them in your corner, Brian, but the thing was, like, Brian, you have to be in a fight, and here's the thing. You can have any coaching corner in your room, but the hypothetical trick is you have to have them in your corner in the bedroom when you're having sex.
Holy shit.
Like, I love Henry Hooft as a striking coach, but can you imagine that guy cornering you in the bedroom? Like, especially if, like, me and you both like our whiskey. Maybe we had a little too much whiskey one night. Fucking Henry Hooft's like, come on! Don't quit, then! Don't quit! Where's the rumble I know?
More faints! Yeah. More faints! You can finish here! You can finish!
We're just fucking sweating, gassed out.
Don't quit now! Yeah, sure.
Oh, God, sorry about that sidetrack. But, yeah, that's a good point because it goes from that to a complete opposite where he taps out again from a similar choke, right? Rear naked choke, except he does quit. Like, but the ultimate of quits, retiring. I'm not hating on that. In fact, I sent out a congratulatory tweet, and I think that regardless of what you think of Anthony Johnson's character, he showed absolute vulnerability and humanity, which I appreciate from anybody. Especially
humble rumble.
Yeah, especially from tough men who idolize men fear, like, oh, rumble to knockout power. And, like, that's the best way to defeat that trope and humanize that trope, because I hate it, not just being a contrarian, but as a martial artist to share the room with these guys, we're going, like, listen, I'm fucking shit stew, and I know these guys are athletic fucking gold. I'm not saying that's not the case, but what I am saying is, like, y'all don't know psychology, and y'all don't know these guys in the fight room.
Yeah.
And how that stuff can be equalized. The guy with not athletic nature, but with a fighting spirit, can more than times than not overcome the athletic guy. I've seen it. I've experienced it, thankfully, on the positive end sometimes. Not all the time, but by any means. Yeah. But I've experienced it. And people don't understand that aspect. And yeah, so I appreciate victory or defeat anytime. Quote unquote macho person shows vulnerability. I think it's something we should all respect.
Definitely.
I think that's what we should all strive for. Yeah. And I think that makes someone like Anthony Johnson look more stronger than knocking someone out. Showing that he has a strength to be like,
when he kills people, he's humble.
He destroyed 9/10 of the top fighters in the world at the most fucking dangerous level. They say 200 pounds is the ideal.
Gator just laying on the ground.
Through men's history, through the history of men, combat, and war, 200 pounds is the ideal weight of a warrior. That's something I was told about 15 years ago in traditional martial arts by my instructor, and it's kind of rang true as I've only educated myself further in combative martial arts. I think we can all agree on that. Sure. We look at the weight classes, yeah. right? I mean, that's why Rumble is so fucking scary, right? When you say Rumble versus anybody in fantasy matchups.
70 pounds.
And even that guy is scared. That should show people, like, what we're really dealing with. Like, why you should respect every motherfucker that steps in there.
Definitely.
It doesn't matter how they look. It takes real courage. So, hopefully you made out okay tonight. But I played DC. I played him inside the distance. But my main parlay piece was the reason why I ended up well tonight. We did good. And I don't know why I fucking tweeted 8-2. I've had 3 beers since then. I can do better math and speak better than that initial tweet. But we went 11-2. And most of the parlay leans at the end closed on those first 3 out of the 4 fights. But yes, it closed on this fight. The main event, Brian, does not go the distance. And that didn't... Excuse me, it did not.
No, it did not.
No, it did not, indeed. I don't know. I was looking on Twitter earlier during a little break where we were feeling bruised. I don't know who won the performance and fight of the nights, but just for the shits of it, we'll go back and look after this. But for the audience, since they're listening and like, these fuckers don't know shit. They're drunk. Who do you think won the two performances and the fight of the night?
I'm gonna say Burgos. With okay. the one performance of the
Even
night.
With his shitty 50 G's, baby?
Dude. Connor, oh, did just he kidding. Say it? Oh, I missed
He
the
did the fucking most cliche. Again, a night of that, shitty man. Post-fight fucking interviews.
Usman, definitely.
Just for performance alone, even though it was a decision, I would agree with that.
Oh, 3-10 at 8 rounds.
That's a hipster choice, but I'm completely with that.
Definitely.
Okay, who's the second guy? Then you think?
Shit, that's a good one. Fucking who beats me? What is it? Fight of the Night is another one?
Yeah.
Shit, it's gotta be... I don't know. That's a good question, man. I'm definitely feeling that beer.
I think Fight of the Night... You tell me you agree with this. I'm still curious how my part of performance nights we listen to. I think Fight of the Night should be Alves versus Cote. Just because it was a fun fight, even though it may not be the funnest off first memory. But Cote retired and lost. And it's kind of a good way to pay both guys. You get... Alves has the bounce back performance, a win in the first 2 years. Cote calls it quits. They both are dogs. People were excited about that. They came and scrapped. Even though they couldn't finish each other, they gave it their all.
Burgos and Rosa was another one, though.
He was
Rosa was winning that fight, in my opinion.
I would like that, too, because then it gives Rosa money for a loss and then makes up for, even though I agree with the stoppage and you agree too, but I wouldn't disagree with it calling it a controversial stoppage fitting in
but
that
I'd
field.
Say Rosa was winning those rounds all the way leading up to that I'd
which
say
is true two, which kind of gives favor, although we don't disagree, but gives favor to the hence controversial stoppage. And a great way to quell that record is give him a fight of the night, because God, remember the days where Diego Sanchez, Martin Campman, Louisville, fucking 75 or 100K bonuses? Back when the UFC would like make, would fucking say, okay, commission, fuck you, we're going to pay these guys. Oh, I wish they still did that.
They might.
Well, this is a way they can, this is one of the few ways that they only can do it, I think, now. Yes, I mean, and I think those backroom bonuses are kind of a lot lamer than they were, to be honest.
When,
but
when the mobsters were running.
I'll say my performance of the nights, okay, I'll give it to
DC.
We'll give it to DC. We'll give one to DC, and I'll give the other one to... You can make an argument for Jury, although I definitely won't pick him. I'm with you on that Usman as far as the hipster choice, but in the second of being different, you know what? Let's go Patrick Cummins. I was about to say Charles Oliveira, but that was too weird of a fight. It was too easy, and Oliveira's missed weight too damn much. He's had too many gimmies. I don't think they should give me the bonus. I will change to Patrick Cummins. Another decision pick like you had for Usman, which I agree with, but fucking Cummins had to come back hard. Yeah, balls.
Rocking that stash with 1-2.
And he doesn't have that many of those fights left, right? Let's be honest. Even if he has a positive upturn, how many more damage can that guy take?
Yeah, he took some serious damage.
Yeah. Pay Patrick Cummins. Fuck that. Pay Patrick Cummins. All right. I'm going to check. Any last thoughts on the card while I check the submissions and transitions, see if we got any?
Outside of the Musasi-Weidman fiasco, it's a good night. Weird vibes, but still good night.
It was a good night, man. Had a lot of interaction. Even though we actually don't look that we have submissions and transitions to shout. By the way, if you want to do feature runs, it's a little hard for the breakdown because obviously I break down everything from top to bottom. Although, if you feel like there's something that I'm not going to cover, please use hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast to contribute for the after party editions. You can also use the same hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast to contribute your hot takes or questions, any of that sort, afterthoughts, after the math, after the fact. We didn't have it tonight. And of course, for our most noted and ever-growing popular ones, Brian. The top five themes, top five MMA themes.
It's growing.
Yes, use hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast to not only submit your top five list, which we will announce the top five show, but you can also have say in the top five theme by, yes, using hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast to submit your top five theme. If you want to see something covered, like, you know, top five head and arm chokes, top five outside the octagon interviews, top five, you know, whatever.
Most concussed interviews.
Oh, jeez. That's a fucked up, a good one. Really fucked up one. Jeez.
I felt the tap.
But feel free. If you want to bug my friend Brian and bother him to tweet more and get him more active, where can they follow you, Brian?
At BR14N on Twitter.
Powerful. Well, you can follow me at the MM Analyst, whatever work I have coming out. Follow this podcast here at the PYM Podcast. I already beat the dead horse on how to contribute in that hashtag. So I guess until next time, drink plenty of beer, but not too much, and protect your neck.
Peace.
Peace, motherfuckers.